Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks. Welcome to the African American Family Room Forum on this Saturday evening of December the 8th, 2018. We're almost at the end of 2018, and it's been an interesting year. A lot of things have happened, a lot of very horrific things, a few good things. One good thing, I'm not bragging, but I turned 75 just this week. And that's a good thing. I'm glad that I was able to survive 75 years after spending 30 years in the U.S. military, many years in university life as a student and as a professor. And so I'm happy that the years turned out well for me, but there are many people that have suffered a lot since the beginning of 2018. So let us keep our prayers going forward that they will have a better 2019. But anyway, we welcome all of you who have joined us tonight, those who have joined us via the internet, and of course our regular panelists who are with us tonight. We want to especially welcome you, Mr. Bianchi. I see that you have arrived, and so thank you for coming. We always enjoy your participation ever since almost the beginning of our program 2 years ago. You've been a member of our regular panel. We appreciate it. Before we bring you on, though, we do want to announce our topic for tonight. Our topic tonight is, should college football players, and I'm particularly talking here about black college football players, I didn't put that on the marquee, but that's particularly what I'm talking about. Should black college football players be recruited just to play football as employees of the college athletic department and not to, quote, unquote, go to college? I want to mention something here, a little study. It was done recently, just to give you a little bit of background. And it says that, according to a study published in March, let me see what year this was, make sure we're talking about something that's relatively current. I'll go back and look at the beginning of this article. Okay, so this is actually a couple of years old, but I don't believe that these figures are too skewed because of the time lapse. But anyway, a study published by the University of Pennsylvania City for the Study of Race and Equity in Education, noted that just over half of black male athletes at the 65 wealthiest athletic programs graduate within 6 years, compared to 68% of athletes overall and 75% undergraduates overall. And then it goes on to say, and I'll make it brief, the study compared the federal graduation rates of black male college athletes, all athletes, and black male undergraduates, and all undergraduates at Power Five colleges and universities. Two-thirds of those institutions graduated black male athletes at rates lower, and it doesn't say it here, but later on it says significantly lower than black men who are not athletes. And then it goes on to say that it's time for the NCAA and colleges to better acknowledge the academic struggles of black male athletes, in particular those in revenue sports like football and basketball. And then it goes on in conclusion to say athletic departments have to be held accountable for ensuring they're bringing in people who are college ready and who are not just there to play football and basketball. And if you're going to bring in people who are not academically prepared, the least you can do is get them the support they need. Now, we're about to start our conversation, but I want to just mention this. As I've said often in the past, every week I look at the news and I try to see what may be something that may be appropriate and relevant concerning the African-American community that we can discuss on this program. Well, I didn't do that this week because something else prompted me to want to talk about this topic, and I'll just share with you briefly. As I mentioned before, I teach college history, and I have an online course where there are several black colleges where I have students, because it's in a state university system where there are about five historically black colleges that enroll their students in my program to take history. It's an online class. And this past August, when the beginning of the course began, the course was 8 weeks, one of the students that enrolled shortly after we began, and I saw he wasn't doing any of the work, and I contacted him by email to remind him that he needed to get started turning in the assignments if he wanted to pass. And he told me then in an email response that he had a part-time job, and that's why he wasn't getting the work done on time, but he was going to try to catch up. Well, he didn't catch up. A couple of weeks later, he came clean and he told me that he was practicing for football. Apparently, he was there at this black college on a football scholarship, and the football program was going into full swing and was demanding all of his time. At least he wasn't doing any of the schoolwork in my course. I don't know about the other classes that he was required to take. And so towards the end of the course, I decided that I didn't want to hurt him by failing him. And if I had to do it all over again, I might have done differently, but I decided to give him an incomplete. And I wrote to him and encouraged him to get the work turned in so he could get a passing grade. Well, there were some quizzes that he hadn't taken, and all of a sudden, these four or five quizzes appear with decent grades, and this is an open book quiz. You know, it wasn't something he had to remember, memorize anything, something where all he had to do was just go to the online textbook and get the answers. I only use 10% of the quiz. The quiz only counts for 10% of my final grade, and I'm required to give a quiz, but most of my grading comes from papers, and he didn't turn in any of his essays. But he got these quizzes turned in, which gave him a D grade. Well, a D grade in any college is not satisfactory. And he wrote to me and he said, please let me have the D grade as my final grade. And I wrote to him and I tried to encourage him to do better, at least to try to get a C by turning in one or two of the essays that were required. And he persisted in saying that he had to practice football. He didn't plan on doing any more work, it seemed, and he just wanted to degrade. So finally, today I had to turn in a final grade for him because I didn't have to. I could have given him till the deadline, which was the 15th. But he said if he didn't get this degrade submitted by the 11th, he wasn't going to be able to play in this college bowl game, which is going to be this coming Saturday in Montgomery, Alabama. Big bowl game. And it was very important to him to play in the bowl game. It didn't seem to be important to him to get a good grade in the history class. Well, you know, he had earned the D, probably, you know, persisted in trying to get him to do better, but I didn't want to deny him the opportunity to play in his football game since that seems why he was in college. And he earned a D, so I turned the D in, but I didn't feel good about it. And that's what prompted me to discuss the topic tonight. I mean, if these young folks are not going to go to college to get an education, you know, why should they carry the facade of being college students when they're just paid football players? And so what I'm asking is, you know, maybe a different paradigm should be instituted to where they get hired just to play football to raise money for the school. I mean, I'm not trying to put them on the same plane. I'm not trying to say, I mean, but the coaches, they're paid to run football programs or basketball programs. Why can't the players be hired just to play instead of, you know, being recruited to go to college when most of them don't seem, well, I won't say, but at least according to these statistics, half of them don't seem to be interested in graduating. And some of those that graduate in such a weak fields that they're probably not going to get really lucrative job positions. And the other sad thing about it, and then I'll be finished, is that only 2%, 2 out of every 100 of these really good college football athletes gets into the pros. The other 98% who may or may not have graduated, but those who graduated may not have a skill set to get a good job. What happens to them? And yet they put all the eggs in that basket, like this young man that I was trying to help. So you can see where I'm a little bit disturbed about that situation, and that's why I picked this topic. Well, enough from me. I would like to hear your opinion, Ms. Bianchi, but first I want to say welcome to you to the program, and how are you doing this evening, sir?
I'm doing fine on yourself.
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I guess you can see I'm a little bit disturbed about this particular situation of these young men going to college that aren't really going to college. They're just going on the campus as college students to play ball. And that's why I picked this topic. But anyway, I went over a lot of background. Probably I didn't need to go that deep into it because it's pretty widespread knowledge about what's happening. But what do you think, sir?
Well, I'm not for that, Marshall. Me personally, I think that they should be there to get education courses. If they do well, they looking for the opportunity to go to the pros. But you only got about 27 schools that turn a profit. University of Texas probably being the greatest one. And the least is probably Virginia. But I think that scholarships, I think that they should be made sure that they graduate. If they injured, they should be made whole again. And that's just my opinion on that.
Yeah, that's a fair opinion. And I only put it out there. I didn't say one way or another, as you notice, you know, being part of our regular panel for almost 2 years, that usually, even though I may give background and may, in some cases, make a assertive position statement, usually I leave it neutral and let people weigh in according to the way they feel that in this particular position, in this situation, rather, I'm not saying that the students should not be recruited to go to college and be able to play ball, but it just seems to me that so many of these young men, like this one I was telling you about, are not interested in college per se. It doesn't seem that way. Anybody that would, you know, persist in wanting to get a less than satisfactory grade just so they can play ball, it seems to be that their motivation for education is not that high. That's just my opinion, being a teacher. But I'm not saying that they shouldn't recruit athletes to go to college, because over half of them are graduating, and of those who are graduating, maybe some of them are serious and some of them may be going into some very, very lucrative programs, post-undergraduate programs. And, of course, I also was thinking about the fact that at the service academy, the Army, Navy, and Air Force, I don't know about the Coast Guard, Naval team, but I know that these three service academies, they demand rigorous attention to academics for those players that play football on those teams, and they probably can expect to graduate. I mean, I guess probably 99.9% of those football players that play up until their junior or senior year will graduate. The only reason why they wouldn't graduate is that they were injured and got dropped out of the military officer training program, or they did something disciplinary-wise and got kicked out. But it's not likely to happen. So they're going to graduate, and they're going to graduate with degrees like engineering and other what we would call hard science-type degrees for the most part, and they're going to be guaranteed 4 years of management-level training in the military, and most of them are going to get a master's degree during that time. So they're kind of like the real exception to the rule, and that would include, of course, those African-American students that play on those teams because they're held to rigorous standards just like everybody else. They're not given those easy courses like it's happening in a lot of these large colleges or special tutors to help do their work for them. And there was a big case, you may be familiar with, the North Carolina Chapel Hill case several years ago where they actually had people that were paid to actually do the papers. They were called paper courses that these athletes took because all they had to do to pass was to write a single paper for the whole course. They didn't have to go to class or maybe only a few times. And somebody else was helping to write the papers for them. Well, that's not certainly going to happen at the military academies. But I just feel that that's something that needs to be looked at. But we just a few moments ago, we see that our dear sister in law Stephanie has joined us. And Stephanie, I hope you're doing well this evening. I saw on the news that the weather's getting pretty rough up in your area. In fact, I understand that it was about a foot of snow near you down in the Charlotte, not Charlotte area, but somewhere near you. What is the weather like, Stephanie? And welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. Well, the ground is covered with snow. We were late getting ours, but it's still coming down. It's probably about an inch or two of snow out there right now, but I suspect that by morning it'll be quite a bit of snow. I thank God that we're fully equipped with everything, you know, because people are talking about when they go into the stores, there was no bread, there was no water. Well, I really thank God that we had all the things that we need. Oh, God. So we don't have to go out in it.
What about a generator in case the power goes up? How's your house heated? Is it heated with gas or electricity?
We have electric, and we do not have a generator. Right now, it's just very warm in the house.
Yeah.
Last year, our winter, I think we had one blackout that lasted about an hour in this area. So just hope and pray that we don't have anything like that because, it'll be all about quilts and coats.
Yeah.
You know, if we definitely don't have a generator.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen. We'll go ahead and move on to the topic. The topic that we have for tonight, I don't know if you had come on when I actually mentioned the topic, but let me repeat it for you. This is the topic. Should college, and I meant to say, and I'm saying now, should black college football players be recruited just to play football as employees of the college athletic department the way they recruit coaches and coaching staff as employees for the athletic program and not be recruited to, quote, go to college since a large percentage of them are not really going to college in any real sense. They may be sitting in class, they may be taking some courses so they can maintain eligibility. But as I was mentioning a few minutes ago in the case of one of my students, they don't seem to really be serious about getting a college education. Most of them are playing ball there so that it can be scouted for the pros, of which only 2 out of 100 of them are going to get into the pros. But that's a dream that compels them to take a chance by going to college, hoping that they do get picked up. But yet, you know, it seems to me that if they're going to just go there to be football or basketball players, first of all, for the money that they're making for the schools, they should be getting paid rather than just getting a scholarship when many of them are not going to get a degree. So that's the question. Should black college football players be recruited just to play football and as employees of the college athletic department and not to go to college? Now, you weren't in the chat room when Mr. Pianca gave his response. So, Stephanie, before you come on, let me ask Mr. Pianca to reiterate his response, and then you can dovetail on the back of that because you may be prompted to give a response based on what he says. So, Mr. Pianca, would you reiterate your position?
Well, I said no. I think they should go there to get education. If they hurt, they should be rehabilitated to get them back to where they were, like University of Missouri, Columbia does. But as far as getting paid, I don't think so. You know, and if you look at the NCAA finances for 2016-2017, our USA Today.com published those. And out of the 230 colleges, all these colleges aren't making money off these sports when you look at their total expenses versus total revenue. So my position on that is no.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bianchi. So, Stephanie, you heard Mr. Bianchi's position. I'm remaining neutral for now on the topic. I may weigh in with an opinion later. We'll see how that goes. But what do you think?
Well, I'm not going to remain neutral. You know, it's very seldom that I agree with Mr. Bianchi, but I agree with him 100% on that. Now, my husband, your brother-in-law, Mark, he had a full scholarship to New Mexico to play football, you know, out of high school. Now, his parents already had his college fund fully paid for him to go to a good college down in Georgia. And he chose that football scholarship. You know, that didn't work out. Anyway, people get hurt in college like they do in the pros. You got to have something else to back up on. You just can't bank that play in that sport on everything. It's important to have an education. You know, I don't care who it is and how well they play. They don't need to get paid for it because they're not pros. I don't know. The education is way more important, I think, period. That's about all I have to say about that right now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, we may not go long tonight because once an opinion has been firmly grounded into the discourse, there's no reason to ask that it be reiterated over and over again just because we want to go for an hour or longer. But I do want to mention, and we're certainly not going to argue because these opinions are well-founded, I'm sure. Personally, my opinion is that if a student wants to go to college, and I help students quite frequently with preparing personal statements to get into medical school, nursing school, and graduate programs, I mentor students, and one of the things that I counsel them about is that you have to show the admissions committees that you're special, that you're one of those people that's going to go the extra mile when things get rough to succeed because you have the heart, you have the desire that going on into these graduate programs is passion related. It's something that you are compelled in yourself to achieve. And I feel that the same thing should be true for people going into undergraduate programs. I know for the big, big schools, even if they don't offer you a scholarship, because in many cases their turndown rate is over 80%, 70 and 80%, they're looking for people that are committed to do the work. So they don't want people just coming and they're lounging around being satisfied with getting D's. Like this one student that I was talking about earlier, Stephanie, that's in my class, one of my classes, he wanted to get a D just so he could play football. I tried to encourage him at least turn in some of the work he hadn't turned in so he could get a C at least. That wasn't interesting to him. He just wanted to get a D so he could play in a football game, the bowl game, so he could be scouted, I guess, for the pros. But the point of it is that I question whether people that feel that way about education should even be in college. I guess that's really, you know, as a college teacher, I guess that's really what this whole conversation for me is all about, you know, and that includes people that just want to go to college because they want to meet somebody to marry, or they want to be in a fraternity and be popular and have a lot of friends and party. To me, even though historically college has been a time, at least when I went through years and years ago, of exploring life and meeting people and having a good time, but the real purpose of being enrolled in college should be to try to get an education, a good education.
That's right.
And you know, tonight, I'm going to kind of cut this short in a minute, but I want to say this. A lot of the schools now, I won't say all the schools, but I know the school where I teach, the senior and junior years of undergraduate study are almost like being in graduate school. The level of rigor and the intense, what I would say, pressure on students to achieve at a very high academic level is very, very similar to being in a master's program. And I can say that because of the fact that I have several, you know, graduate degrees, and I know it was not like that when I was an undergrad. But I know now, because I work with a lot of undergraduates in terms of tutoring them in research-related courses, undergrad courses, and they are getting the same level of rigor applied to their courses as students in graduate school. And I work with both graduate and undergrads. And that means that a person can't dilly-dally around for 2 years without having a focus. They have to want education, not just to be in college. And now most of the professions, I won't say all, require a graduate degree as an entry-level ticket. So if a student can't get a B average and prepare themselves in many cases for a graduate record exam or some type of graduate admissions exam, they're not going to even get into the graduate programs to be able to walk into these professions. So this whole idea of people going to school, playing ball, hoping to get picked up, hoping to be one of those 2 out of 100 that gets picked up by the pros, and being satisfied to go through the coursework with D's, you know, I think there's something wrong with that picture. And that's the reason why I chose the topic. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to say that these people should be hired just to play football, because there is that percentage of them that can play football and do well and graduate, et cetera, et cetera. But I still think that there's something wrong with bringing these young folks, underprepared young folks, into college and not encouraging them to pass these classes and get good grades just so they can stay around and play football after school and spend 90% of their time on the campus during the daylight hours, either in the gym or on the football field, when they should be maybe on the football field 3 hours out of the day and the other 17 hours a day, they should be getting ready for class or doing something to get a good grade. That's my opinion.
Yeah, amen to that.
Yes, but I want to ask this to Gail. She just joined us. And I want to ask her opinion, so please bear with us as we bring her on. And I don't mean bear with us. What I mean is that those of you who thought we were going to quit, rapidly, I want you to stick around because she always has some very insightful comments, and she's an educator. She's a retired school teacher, and I'm sure she has seen a lot of young men that she's taught in the elementary program growing up and finished high school. Maybe some of these young men became school athletes. So she may have a feeling about it. But welcome, Sister Gail. And before I bring you on, I do want to reiterate the topic just for you. And here's our topic for tonight. Should black college football players be recruited just to play football as employees of the college, similar to the coaching and the staff that works with the athletic department, are recruited just to be in that paid position, not to be in college? Should these football players be recruited just to be playing football for the school and not to go to college, especially those who are academically not prepared for college? So that's the topic for tonight. And again, welcome, Sister Gail. I hope you're doing fine. And before you come on, what's the weather like up there? Because I hear up on the East Coast is getting worse again. How is it up there?
Well, we had snow yesterday, but it's getting chillier. It's supposed to be down to the 19 to 20 degrees tonight. But no snow from what I heard the last time I listened to the weather.
Okay, well, I hope you stay warm. We're fairly okay down here in Georgia. Other parts of the South, I hear flooding and having snow. We had rain all day, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been, and hopefully it won't get worse. But anyway, you heard the topic, so what's your opinion? What do you think?
Well, I think all those that go to college should be getting a degree and should be going this, for that purpose. But, however, we have to realize that entertainment and extracurricular activities now have become a big industry. And as much as students go to college to take on so many things, now are part of that culture, part of that industry. What they should do is they should prepare them for things in that field. Like you have athletic trainers, you have physical therapists, and they should be encouraged to take on those type of occupations and studies that would, be more in line with what they're doing as an athlete. Because it's such a hard structure to tear down. It's been so long being built up. What used to be, even in high school, I mean, you even go down to the midgets. This is a big business industry. You have with all the the logos and just all the sneakers, the shirts, the hats, all those marketing and business. And, there's so many industries that profit from athletics that other students go to school for. So they should definitely, even though they're going to play sports, they should be encouraged to be educated in those things that will help them if they don't succeed as that athlete, but they still have an interest in that industry. But it's hard, and I think there's, I remember, I think it was Coach Chaney at Temple University, how hard he fought for them to be tutored. Him and what was the other one at what was that college? That college, I think it's Thompson. I mean, they made big statements and they fought hard for the athletes to be even tutored and you know, making academics be high priority. I think his name was Thompson at is it Georgetown University, I think. When I was growing up, I remember, you know, them taking such a stand on those things, and you know, just the whole industry had to change. And then you see, you know, the like Charles Barkley and Isaiah Thomas, and I can't think of the football players right now, Michael Strahan and different ones like that, how in communications now, because of how big the industry is now, they become sports announcers and things like that after they, you know, are finished playing football. So, you know, I think we have to just realize that the big industry that it is here in the United States and now all over the world, and better prepare the athlete to be, you know, successful on the field and then also when they get off the field. And, I, you know what I mean? It's hard to say, you know, you take a child or a man now and you look at the life of, like, I'm just going to say, because he's in my area, LeBron James, and, you know, how well and how he's achieved and, you know, from the area he came for, that he took his money that he made to try to make it better for other young kids that were coming up the way he came up. And he partnered with the public schools here, and, you know, he had the idea of a school, and he put a lot of money. He encouraged them to put money, and he, every child that goes to that school is guaranteed a 4-year college scholarship at the University of Akron. He partnered with them. So, you know what I mean? There's good and bad, and I think we need to look at where the deficits are. I was listening in, and you were saying something about, I think, the athletes that go to the military schools or whatever, that maybe there could be a model if they're doing it, you know, better, preparing athletes to have a education and a career other than athletics. Maybe they could be looked at as a model for some of these colleges, because they unfortunately do take advantage of our athletes, and especially the African-American athletes. But, you know, over the years, you've seen improvement. We have a young man from here. He didn't come from the best environment, but he was blessed because he worked hard, and he did, you know, excel in athletics and scholarship. And he went to, where did he go to? Not Michigan, Notre Dame, I think he went to. And he was recruited into Indianapolis Colts. But he got hurt early, but because a coach like, what's his name that was there, Coach Dungy, he really prepared those athletes and everything. And he's just doing phenomenal things in his community, too. He helped build houses, giving back. And he got injured, and you know, they pass him around, I think, for 5 years or so till they get, so they can get their retirement and things like that. But, and, you know, he comes back into our community, and he does a football camp, and you know, he takes the students out there where he is in Indianapolis. The students from here, you know, he developed a program to motivate them, you know, for the academic parts and stuff. So they should be going, you know, if they excel in athletics, they should be, well, I don't know if they compensated, but the sad thing about it is they're already, so many of them are compensated under the table. And then when whatever happens and they get caught, the student is the one that gets hurt the most when this is everybody knows it because everybody does it. When they recruit them, they make promises to their family. They move their families. They take care of their families. And this is at college level for some of these colleges. But I don't know what, you know, why they just don't go ahead and make some of this stuff legal, and then you don't have to worry about sneaking around and doing it. Because it's done, and it's sad, but it's a hard thing. But we should make sure that they're educated also. Because it was that, I don't remember the name, but I remember because of being an educator, Marva Collins, when she started that college preparatory school. I think it was in Chicago, and that one athlete, he couldn't even read a menu. But she took him, and she worked with him and, you know, taught him how to read and everything. And he was, I think he was in college when that happened. So we just have to, I think, because it's such a big industry, I can't see, or because didn't they just change that they can't go right out of high school into the NBA? I mean, into the pros? So it's, you know, you have
maybe
to.
Maybe Ms. Bianchi can answer. I'm not sure how it works.
Yeah, I think they changed something that because so many were choosing that to go from if they was really good in high school that they could go right to the pros. But I think they changed something that they can't now.
Yeah,
so,
just a minute. Ms. Bianchi, do you know anything about that, Ms. Bianchi?
Well, they made some changes. I don't know how many years they have to attend college. I think LeBron James came out of high school. But
yeah, there was some that did, and then I think that's when they changed it because it's too many were wanting to go right in.
Yeah, the amount of sacrifice that has been put to make one LeBron James is tremendous. From his youngest period of time when he started playing, parents had to prepare their kids, buy them uniforms, equipment, had to travel, buy them hotel accommodations in order for him to have competitive teams to play against. And that was all through his younger careers on through high school. Parents expended a lot of time, effort, sweat, tears, and money just to produce one him. So, yes, you're right. The kids, they need to have the education. And I'm going to tell you something else, too. Blacks, you know, people do whatever they want to. I get away from the points and saying what, quote-unquote, we should be doing. But it's one thing obvious is that when you look at the professions and industries and you look for the African-American, they aren't there. And there has to be a certain effort to elevate their presence in these high-paying fields and out-of-the-box fields. That's how people from working in these fields, in these industries, managing by working for other companies, that's how you pick up the skills where you can run your own company competing against those you once worked for. In transportation, whether the transportation is air cargo, whether the transportation is ocean going, maritime, you don't see blacks there. As much fish as Claude Anderson once quoted, as blacks like to eat, you don't see blacks out on the ocean in trawlers. You don't see them up in the North Sea on trawlers hauling in shrimp, hauling in fish. And I think that they're would hope to see a change. Of the number of engineers in the United States, I think I've made mention of this before, Marshall, blacks make up about 4%. That's not even your percentage as your population is in the country. And then what does that mean? Well, the contribution that's coming out of your ethnic group toward the overall betterment of the country in many areas, from research, discoveries, also in areas of being able to donate back to your historical black colleges. It's not there. You depend on others to make these donations. One of the large parts of revenue that's generated by universities come from donations. Those donations, in some cases, Marshall, is greater than the revenue that they receive in those major sports. And you can look at some schools, like LSU, for instance, whose total revenue is $147 million. You look at the donations that they receive, the donation or the contributions, well, you got ticket sales about $41.8 million. Your contributions is $36.9, right at $37 million. So that means one thing that you can look at, that the people that's going to the school and have went to the school, what they learned has allowed them to capture and extract from the economics of the United States, whereas they have enough discretionary income that they can donate back to their school. When you look at the historical black colleges and universities, that's just not happening. And Marshall, you made a comment earlier about the weak, low-paying majors that blacks are overrepresented in. In other words, if your population is 13%, you may be upwards of 28%, 30% in these low-paying majors. And that has to change, you would hope so. That change starts with individuals. I've done what I had to do, and hopefully that others would do the same thing. And you know another thing too, Marshall. Yesterday I met I had two doctor friends, they're Nigerians, and I met the one's daughter. And she's 13 years old, and she's a med student at Washington University. Washington University is a little Harvard of the Midwest. 13 years old, a medical student. That's pretty impressive. So that's my opinion, Marshall. You still there?
Yep, and we're going to wrap up here in just a minute.
What do you think about that 13-year-old?
Well,
it's amazing. That's outstanding.
It is outstanding.
I love it.
But
you know,
a lot of that comes from her family background, because I have a real. Am I on? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, I just wanted to say this before we get off to answer your question, Mr. Bianchi. I have a very close friend that's Nigerian. He's an engineer, actually. He's an environmental engineer, I believe. And he got his doctorate from Tulane University. The way I met him, actually, is that when his daughter was just beginning high school, he would bring her to the library. I have an office in the library. I have a dual hat type situation. I'm a research consultant, and I have an office in the library, but I'm also on the faculty, and I teach history. But I saw him come in one evening with his daughter, who was at that time about 13 years old, maybe 14, and he sat her down to do her homework, and he went over to one of the computers that was available to the public and asked me to show him how to log on, and I did, and that started a friendship that's lasted for years. And every single school night, he would bring his daughter in there, and he would talk with me or find something on the internet that interested him, while she did her homework for about 3 hours, and this was every single school night. And she eventually was accepted into the University of Georgia and several other, you know, good schools. I can't remember what field she chose to study. But he was very, 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 I won't say hard on her. I could say that. But he was very demanding of her. And I think that in the case of this 13-year-old medical student, a Nigerian young lady that's in medical school, that something similar to that probably happened in her family situation. She probably had parents or other relatives that encouraged her to leave the play alone, or at least to limit it to when she didn't have to do schoolwork, and just really focused her on going as far as she could with her academics. And that's the reason why she was probably able to get into med school. Because you remember, you don't get into med school in the United States without at least 3 years of undergraduate work in some hard science like chemistry or biology. So that meant that not only had she completed the elementary school requirements and the high school requirements, but she'd also either finished college or come close to finishing a college undergraduate program. And we look at that and we say, oh, that's miraculous, that's spectacular. But I want to share this with you. Sister Gill, you may have some knowledge of this history, but I remember when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had the Nation of Islam, University of Islam school going. I was a teacher in that school. As a matter of fact, I was one of the charter organizers of the school out in Oakland, the University of Islam in Oakland, where I taught math. And my son actually was reading at 3 years old because they took the students in at 3 years old and immediately began to teach them how to read. And I'm not talking about the traditional, you know, here comes Spot, Spot has a ball, you know, Dick. You know, they were teaching them real types of knowledge, you know. And so I saw then the potential to produce the kinds of students, Mr. Piyaki, that you're referring to, because that educational system was not about students spending 4 hours a day just sitting around playing, even though they did have recreation periods, but it was a very serious program. And I think that the idea of students maybe not necessarily starting med school at 13, but you know, Martin Luther King started Morehouse at 16. My mother started Tuskegee at 16, graduated at 19. I think it's very likely that if we change the way we look at education, we can maybe not have a lot of students at 13 going to medical school, but we can certainly have a lot of students at 15 going to college. But getting back to the point, because we're going to wrap up in just a second, I do believe, honestly, I hate to sound elitist, but I do believe that everybody is not, I won't say intellectually equipped, but everybody is not necessarily temperamentally equipped or motivationally equipped to do the rigors of a real good, strong college undergraduate program when they're 18 years old. Now, some may be when they're 25 after they've had a little experience out in the world. I went to college for a semester at Berkeley. After being accepted at Princeton and Yale, I wasn't emotionally equipped to compete in college. I joined 3 years in the Army, grew up support, and then went down to Tuskegee where I did very well. Went back to Berkeley where I did well. But I'm just saying that the idea that everybody jump right out of high school, going to college, whether they are academically fit for it or mentally fit for it, not mentally, but emotionally fit for it, I think that's a wrong idea, and I think that the
well,
idea
you know,
is, go ahead.
You got a good point, because there's a lawsuit now that's involving Asian students in Harvard, and they look at the interview process, because everybody's got good grades. Everybody is a 32 on the ACT and so on and so on and so on, but they get into the personal life, the personal feelings of these potential students, and they want to see whether or not they are self-motivated rather than being motivated by the parents and directed like the parents. They use the term tiger moms in describing that particular procedure, and there's a big lawsuit that Asians have brought against Harvard, and it's being sponsored by an organization who's trying to remove affirmative action from any admissions of college across the country. Now, I'm totally against that. I think affirmative action should be utilized by African-American black students because of a lot of reasons. They need every bit of advantage that they possibly can have. But that is the trend that we see going on today. I'm going to get out of here, Mr. Washington. I know you want to get to your weekend, and I really appreciate the show. Everybody's on.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jack. Have a good weekend. We're going to go ahead and close in a minute. But, Stephanie, did you want to say something before we wrap up?
Yeah, I'm just going to ask you this. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the show tonight. And I, too, have heard of and read up on lots of youngsters, 9-year-olds in college and, you know, 6-year-olds who are ready for college. And these are blacks. And I remember one Asian boy, he was only 3. He could tell you every president there's ever been, and he could tell you every state and every country. He could name them. You know, it's so, and I do believe a lot of that comes from the home, but also, yes, the child has to be really motivated on wanting this. So, even though that's exceptional, that little girl, I'm so proud of her, it's not unusual. It's a lot of children have been able to experience that, you know, and I know my own son was pretty exceptional, too, as a youngster. And I remember a teacher pulling me to the side and telling me that she just didn't have any patience for children unless they were super smart. And she said, "Your son's at the top." She said she loved him so much because anything she showed him, he could do it. But, you know, because he was real motivated with school. He loved it. I wasn't as fortunate, you know, when it came to school. I hated school myself, you know. But then when I began to love school, I rose to the top, like cream rises to the top, because it was something I wanted. And when my husband played football, he had his football scholarship. He had a choice to go to a college down in Georgia where his parents had fully paid for, but he didn't want that. He just wanted to go to school to play football, you know. So, he wound up going to the Air Force, but he wasn't really interested in college career. He was young. And that's how a lot of them are, especially when they're athletes. They're not. So it turned out okay, but it just wasn't for him. You know, he could have done it. He's got the smarts to do it and pull the right grades, but wasn't interested in that. So, and I don't believe a whole lot of them are. And I'm glad that they make them keep up a certain curriculum of grades, grade level, when they're playing those sports, too. You know, so. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Stephanie, thank you so much. And hopefully y'all keep the power on up there and you'll be nice and warm and cozy. Tell Mark we said hi. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go ahead, Sister Gail, and give you the last word. Would you like to make a closing comment before we wrap up for this evening?
Not really. I think I expressed what, you know, I just think we need to just continue to have faith in our students and encouragement, you know, for them to excel. Because, you know, I think there's different talents in different things. And like you said, everybody isn't interested in the academics, but if they can achieve in athletics, because now it is a big, you know, people are, they're making more money than some of the ones that graduate from college with a degree in something else. Some of them are. But always with everybody, I think everybody needs to be educated, you know, and I think even the athletes have something to contribute to this, you know, the life that has come up in America, because it's another industry, is, you know, but a lot of it has to start way back to motivate them. I know my grandson, he played, he was, and we encourage them, and we always say, you know, you have to be a scholar athlete. And, he played in high school. He didn't, you know, get the opportunity. He tried out, but he didn't make it. He didn't get recruited for college, so he's using the other part now. But it's such a big part of high schools and everything, and even the ones that are studying and all, they want to get out there and cheer their school's teams on. You know, football, they have so many things about football, basketball, soccer. So, athletics, I believe, is here to stay. So we just have to find a way to make it better and more, more beneficial to the students that are, you know, because they're encouraged in that way too. I mean, they've taken a lot of stuff out of education, a lot of things that were in the curriculum as far as, the industrial arts and stuff like that, or most schools don't even have them to tweak the children's interest in some of those areas. So there's going to have to be changes in, a lot of the curriculum to encourage, all the students to achieve better. And I think if, you know, those things like engineering now, they're doing robotics, they have STEM and things like that. But, you know, as fair and available as we think these things are, they're not. They become very elitist in a lot of schools. And it's not from achievement, because a lot of students would do better in the curriculums that do robotics and those hands-on type of things. A lot of times they don't get the opportunity because to who they're offered to, you know, or maybe a lot of the children that excel academically, but some of the ones that aren't excelling academically so much could take those robots and do the hands-on type of thing. So it's we just have to keep it encouraging them to excel in whatever they whatever interest area they choose to do.
Okay, well, we want to say thank you, Sister Gail. Thank you, Stephanie. Sister-in-law, my dearly beloved sister-in-law, Ms. Priyanka has left us. But we certainly thank him as well. And all of you who are listening via the Internet, we thank you for having joined us via the Internet tonight. And as we always do, we'll plan on looking throughout the news reports during the week, and we'll try to find a topic that will be an interesting topic so that we can have another lively discussion next Saturday. So for all of you who are listening via the Internet, please join us again at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on next Saturday. For you who are regular members of our discussion group, we certainly thank you for joining us tonight, and we hope that you'll join us again on next Saturday. And now we're going to close with our Black National Anthem.